This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Hi, everybody.
Sam Claiborne.
Hey.
And Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And we've got a great show for you this week. It's the penultimate episode of the year. We'll have one more episode coming for you next week, and then we'll take a little bit. We'll take 1 week off to sort of reset over the holidays, and then we'll be back in the new year. But we've got to talk about Cyberpunk. Man, we still have to talk about Cyberpunk. We talked a little bit about it last week, and I can't think of a bigger debacle in video games. I can't think of a higher anticipated game that's been more of a crash and burn upon release.
I think Death Stranding approaches that, right?
But Death Stranding was just people were just divided on whether or not they liked it or not. This, you know, true. There weren't like it wasn't like completely broken. We also, I can't believe I'm saying this. We also get to talk about Perfect Dark. It's amazing. Still processing that. But first, IGN revealed its Game of the Year nominations this week. So we should probably spend some time discussing that. Tina, can you sort of give us the rundown when the nominations are out there? Have we revealed when we're going to reveal our winners?
I actually don't know if we've revealed when we're going to reveal it. So okay. Without bothering Lucy too much about it, hopefully the GameScoop community alone can enjoy that we will be revealing them on Monday. Provided nothing of surprise happens between then. But that is the plan. So look out.
Unless, yeah, provided Breath of the Wild 2 isn't surprise released over the weekend.
No, boy. I don't know if we'd count that point.
Yeah, we might have to consider that one a 2021 award, which is definitely an awkward scenario we prefer not to find ourselves in, but we will do that in that case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's run down the nominees. Animal Crossing. Obviously, Big hit for Nintendo this year. Sam, you reviewed this one, right?
Yeah, I did. And it ended up being my favorite game this year.
That's your pick?
Yeah. I mean, like, I after playing Cyberpunk, I really love it. I love it. It's such a Cyberpunk.
Okay.
Yeah. It's such like a great RPG that matches the thing I want to be playing at any time. And of course, I'm not discounting tech issues. I'm playing on a very nice PC. So, but Animal Crossing is the game, you know, I think I'll continue playing into next year. It's incredible. Mm. I think it's so fun. And I really like the holiday stuff that's happening right now, except I'm an idiot and it's summer in my game, not from time traveling, but because I chose the Southern Hemisphere. And I needed to do that for the review because I just wanted to have like really good footage of like spring and summer instead of winter for everybody when I was reviewing. I don't know why.
Well, it's just a decision that follows you forever now.
Yeah, it's so dumb. Like, it's like Toy Day, and it's like everybody's all festive, and there's lights up everywhere. And it's like, I'm so hot, though. Everybody says like the weirdest dialogue for it.
It's okay. It's just like you're celebrating the holidays in Hawaii.
Yeah, well, that's very true. And of course, the actual Southern Hemisphere experiences this all the time. But it is like Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Tina and Justin, you both played Animal Crossing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both big fans.
Animal Crossing is also my game of the year for 2020. Wow. Nice. And I also, Sam, I echo everything you just said. I'm really, really loving Cyberpunk, as we're going to talk about later. But when I look down, I have nothing against Hades, which I was also a big fan of, and our other nominees. But Animal Crossing is one that sticks with me and that I feel in my heart and mind is the best game that I have played this year.
Yeah, I've given up on that game. I very much loved it at the time, but I get distracted very easily. Lots of games come out. It's difficult to keep up with all of them. And we don't really have as many travel opportunities. So while that would have been my companion game across many flights, like this year obviously went differently than we had hoped for. So I just haven't played as much. And I do feel a little bit of FOMO out of like not participating in all the holiday stuff. And I'm a little too afraid to also open up my island and see all the weeds everywhere. And everyone's like dying, wondering where I've been. And the town is just in shambles. Yeah.
They always, the villagers are always like, oh man, I haven't seen you in 24 weeks. And
like, oh. Yeah. I basically abandoned that island.
Yeah.
But it was a very good game. And also I think a lot of people like the conversation specifically for this year has been around like that game got a lot of people through the year just because it's been a companion piece just in general as a day-to-day like life companionship thing. So
yeah,
without E3, that was like the one game that we got to see like a cool Nintendo booth for at PAX. They had like a really nice Animal Crossing set up. And that's like the only time we got to see anything like that this year, because that was the last and only event. It's really cool.
Yeah, it would be. It's interesting to think how that game would have been received in a normal year. You know, I'm sure it would still have received well, but would it have been the huge like phenomenon that it was? I don't know.
You know, I reviewed that before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So
it's
like my score and everything. There was discussion like right afterwards, and somebody had included this thing like, oh, if we were stuck at home for a while, like I had seen that a little bit, but like it's not even, I didn't touch upon it in the review. And I just like, it's really interesting how those things coincided.
Mm-hmm. I did not play Animal Crossing. It's not a Damien game.
Makes sense.
I don't know. I know they're not similar. But like Minecraft is not my thing. Stardew Valley. I just like if a game is like too open and it's just like here you go, do whatever you want. I lose interest, get bored really quickly. I need to have like
guidance.
I need to have a quest. I need to have something that
you got to have motivation.
Need to accomplish, and hopefully I have. There are things I get to kill.
Yeah.
Well, you do have quests though. You have like, you know, certain levels of your house you have to build and other things to fill them with.
How about loans, Damon? Aren't you? Isn't that
exactly. That's motivation.
I don't think all the fish live when you catch them either. I'm sure they die.
That counts. Yeah.
I need a little bit more escapism in my video games. But anyway, Sam already mentioned Cyberpunk. So let's jump into Cyberpunk. Now you say you love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unquestionably. I think it's like when it works, it's such a fun, like choice based, like big RPG where it's just like, you know, I follow a story for a while and then I want to follow that more. And the weapon tree or the skill trees and the weapons and everything I'm really into, I'm playing as kind of a magic user with hacking. And I love it. I think it's really fun. Like I finally expanded my slots enough to be able to really mess with people. Like I can mute them or make them forget I'm an enemy. And like now I can actually do stealth. Finally, like there's like things that I'm like upgrading and it's really helping me out. I really like it.
That's my I love.
We lost you there.
Oh, sorry.
I was gonna say we lost you there for just a second, Sam. You said you can mute people and then.
Oh, I can make them forget that I'm an enemy, or I can change their hearing. And so now I'm like actually playing a stealth build, which I couldn't do for a long time because the stealth was frustrating.
Yes, and that's like my one of my criticisms about the game, although it's like possibly top five, honestly, for me this year, because I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying the main storyline, too, and obviously all the side missions that kind of tie back into the main story, which is what I've been focusing most of my attention on. So I'm loving all of that. I'm loving all of the characters. But yes, the one of the downsides is that you were supposed to be able to play this game as like guns blazing, stealth, hacking, you know, mm-hmm. using the various abilities that you have mm-hmm. at your disposal. But I'm finding it mostly successful as a guns blazing type of for game. Sure. Unlike something like even Assassin's Creed Valhalla or Ghost of Tsushima this year, where you can mm-hmm. actually go get through an entire mm-hmm. level in a methodical way with stealth. I felt like there were so many levels where I try to go stealthily and then things just go to complete utter chaos before I know it. And I'm not about to try to even reload previous mm-hmm. saves to get around it just because it feels really impossible to get around stealth. And I've been increasing all of my abilities and, you know, I saw the whistle and the ping and the one that like distracts enemies from thinking that you're an enemy where they get confused and they walk away. But it just, it hasn't been a balanced enough experience to feel like a proper stealth game to me. But I still have been loving the hell out of the game.
You get rewarded for killing people. I mean, like, that's the thing too. Like, if you just avoid everybody and go through the game, like, you get less XP and less cool weapons and money and everything. So it's like, you kind of got to kill everybody at some point. I always give up. Yeah. I like get through a lot of it. And then I'm like, it's yeah. fine.
Yeah, for sure. And Justin, how about you with Cyberpunk?
Yeah, I love the game too. You know, all the criticism that I sort of leveled at CD Projekt last week for the state that the game launched in on consoles is, you know, super valid and legitimate. But I switched to the PC version of the game, and I'm so impressed with what they have pulled off, and I'm excited to see it, you know, just get better over time. And it does make me a little bit sad because I wished it could have launched in this state. Like the level of environmental detail and like the thoughtful nature with which you can build like your V. I don't think the game is getting enough credit for that. Like, you know, the game is still in sort of its meme state right now, where like, you know, look at how broken the AI is. Now these cars disappear. And like, you know, the game deserves that criticism. Like, it's a bummer, but I think that's overshadowing how impressive there are so many systems at play and so many ways that you can develop your character that this is much more of like an RPG than I think that that it's getting credit for at this stage. Like, to build a stealth character, it's not just about like, well, here's the stealth tree, so I put points into the stealth tree, so now I have a stealth character. Like, you need to put silencers on your weapons. Like, you need to take perks from other trees in the hacking tree that like also enable stealth and make it easier.
I even know about silencers.
Yeah, you can. Tina, yeah, we lost your video.
Oh, whoops.
Maybe your lights just went off.
Can you see?
I'm just.
Where am I? Pay the power bill.
That was very strange. You know what? It's a bad connection. I'm sorry about that, guys.
Oh, okay.
It's my cable has a really bad connection.
It's coming back.
Oh, there you're back. So yeah, so that's what I'm most excited about, and most like I'm excited to replay the game when it is finally in like a really, really great state, and I'll probably replay it on console because I saw somebody do a build where they basically they put all their points into shotguns, and then each time they kill an enemy, they move faster. And so the build is basically Sonic the Hedgehog with shotguns, where they sprint all around like a crazy person, shotgunning everybody in the face. And that's like, that's completely different than the way that I'm playing the game. And from a game design and like character build standpoint, like that's really hard and impressive. Like, so I really, really love the game, and I love the writing, and the situation around launch just makes me sad. I was saying on social media that like it'd be so much easier if the game were just bad. Like, if it were bad, it would be bad, and then everyone, you know, and then it would be bad and we'd all move on with our life. But like, the fact that it's like 3/4 amazing and like 1/4 broken makes it just a lot harder game for me to like sort of fit into my mind right now.
Yeah, 100% agreed with basically everything you just said, Justin. I think the RPG element is really astute. Like, there's a lot to discover there. I think the criticisms of them comparing the open world to something like Red Dead's open world, Red Dead 2's open world, is obviously, it's like night and day. Those aren't exactly... sorry, do I need to stop again?
Well, your audio sounds worse now.
Jeez. Yeah, it's doubling
up. Yeah, it's coming from the... Here we go. How's that? Yeah. All right. What was I saying? Yes.
RPG
elements. RPG elements. Thank you. Yeah, so the RPG elements, that makes a lot of sense to me, because the open world, like I'm not much of a player that loves, unless the open world really pulls me in, where there are like natural events happening, like random events that are happening that you can kind of chime in on, and it feels like it connects back to the story. That's my preference, but I don't really feel pulled in by the world outside of how beautiful it is. Like, there's levels of detail in the design specifically, like even to the fine elements of, you know, the trash in this room looks different than the trash out here. So I think design wise, they've really pulled off something gorgeous. But I've seen the footage of people like, you know, blasting off their guns with a bunch of pedestrians around. And then you turn around and you turn back and the game like loads in normal pedestrians that haven't encountered you, like shooting around. Yeah. So I think there's like a level of playable detail that maybe isn't there. And I think that ties back to expectations not measuring up in that sense. But from what you do have in the game, the hype and the marketing aside that maybe didn't live up to that, what you do have in the game, I think, is a really enjoyable experience. And I love Pan Am and Judy and Johnny Silverhand. I think Keanu does a good job, despite what Tom said in our review.
I love how he appears to talk to you. It's so clever. Like, it's really unexpected, because it'll be in like a small side quest and he'll pop in, and he's always doing something physical that's interesting, like sitting on a chair you wouldn't expect, or like being up on a ledge, or like right there. It's just so cool. And I love when you hear him and then you're like looking around like, where is he talking to me from? And then you find him and it's like the coolest thing. Graphics wise, like out in the desert, oh my God, that game gets pretty. It's kind of crazy that they focus so much on the city and neon and rain and everything, and they got a lot of that right. But like, once you get out there and go looking back at like the skyline, it's the coolest thing. I love
It's interesting. Like a Vegas shot.
It's exactly.
It's just interesting to hear you say that, because I'm playing on Xbox Series X, and of course, it's not an Xbox Series X game. It's an Xbox One game that I'm playing on Series X, and I wouldn't say that this version is particularly, you know, good looking. There are other games I played this year, Ghost of Tsushima and Last of Us Part II, that are much, you know, better looking games than Cyberpunk on Xbox Series X. So,
it's just a story of two games, right?
Well, it's CD Projekt Red. Their roots are in PC game development, right? Like, that's like their heart and soul. They're a PC game developer. So I think we're just sort of like being reminded that that's the version of the game they were really giving all of their care and attention to, right?
It's just they nailed the console versions of The Witcher. Like, that's the thing. It's like, that was the crossover that really worked for so many people. And Witcher 3 was just like such a great console RPG. I think they expected to be able to do that again. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen a more like detailed, layered game world than this. Like, if you stand it up next to The Last of Us or Red Dead, like, those worlds have higher like picture quality, like in regards to how they look. But like, the world of Cyberpunk and Night City feels more thought out, where like, you have brands and those brands have billboards and then those billboards have graffiti on them, and it feels layered and built up in a way that's like thoughtful. And like, the way that those hacks are bought from Ripper Docs that are in like back rooms and basements, and like every single interior, like a bar is not just a bar. Like, it has a back room and it has an office and it has like a back alley and like multiple ways into it and out of it. And you can get up on the roof. Like, I got another video that I saw, just like the Sonic the Hedgehog with shotguns, was someone bought the double jump. And you can use the double jump and some of those movement mods to like get on top of, you can get onto the roof of the skyscrapers. And like, the game doesn't tell you to do that. Like, there's no quests that take you up there, but there's loot up there. Like, there's sniper rifles and things like up on the roofs of these tall buildings. And the fidelity of that world and how thoughtful it's put together. But then, you know, you turn around and like, there's cops spawning behind you, you know, teleporting in, and like, and then so much of it just doesn't work. Like, it bums me out. It's like, it's right there. It's so close.
Yeah. I'm definitely enjoying it. So, you know, it's totally my kind of game. But you know, I'm like 10 hours in, which I think I only saw the title screen after 8 hours.
Yeah.
We were talking about how Assassin's Creed is like 5 hours to title screen. Cyberpunk for me was 8 hours to title screen.
Is this longer than Wolfenstein? Is this the longest one? Wolfenstein's was like that too. Remember that?
Yeah, but it wasn't 8 hours, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, they also said specifically they wanted to make the main campaign a little they just through research saw that a lot of people didn't finish Witcher 3.
That's right.
So yeah, I think they're trying to strike the balance of like, you can burn through and just do the main quests here, which I found like a lot of the side quests to be less than enjoyable experiences, even though they do switch them up occasionally. Like all your, I forget his name, but the AI that you interact with where you can chase down all of his vehicles.
Delamain.
Yes, thank you, Delamain. Like, there's Easter eggs in each and every single one of those, so it just feels like diminishing returns to an extent, as opposed to the main quest, which is thrilling, and I'm really close to the end, and it's become quite a mind F with no bleeping, and I'm really enjoying that. I just love, like, a narrative that kind of challenges my thinking, like, do I know this person? Do I like this person? What should I do? I love that kind of story.
Yeah. I've been trying to think about how to suggest side quests to people, and I've played a lot, but not nearly all of them. And I think the romance lines are totally worth doing. Like, there's certain characters that have romance lines, and like, you don't have to play them as romanceable characters, but they're so in depth. It's like, I can't believe, and I think they contribute to the multiple endings too. So it's like, I'm surprised they don't kind of show you those more, because they just kind of fade into the gigs and everything. Like there's just so much to do. It's hard to cut through that.
There's a lot to do.
The game does a really good job of like, you tug on a thread and sometimes it's, you know, it's a 5-minute quest and it's over. But like, sometimes gigantic sprawling side quests start the same way and feel kind of inconsequential and then bloom as you dig into them.
Yeah.
And like, and you don't really know which it's going to be. Like, you don't know if someone's going to be in your story for 5 minutes or, you know, 2 hours.
There's the, like, interestingly too, like the ones that don't get flagged to you, the question mark ones that you actually have to walk up to discover what the side quest is. Some of those are Keanu side quests. So you'd be surprised like what is actually hitting there. Yeah.
That's really cool. I haven't done any of those. Like, I've never even walked up to a question mark.
There's actually a secret ending, because I may have done some Googling. There's a secret ending, and you can only reach it if you have a very specific kind of relationship with Keanu, and it requires you spending time with him and being nice to him, but not too nice, because he can't, you know, think that you're being fake nice. So it's a whole thing.
Whoa, that's so crazy. I wanted to also comment, like, the style of the game is, you know, I like 80s cyberpunk. Like, I think it's really, like, stylistic and cool and neon and neat, and like, they included like a lot of like every single quest in that game, every single one is a reference to a punk or a rock song, and I think there's a trend where they go back in time. I can't really tell, because it starts with like 70s punk. There's like a bunch of Stooges songs in there, like Down the Street and Gimme Danger and stuff like that, and then it goes like, now I saw like some like pretty commonly known songs like Riders on the Storm or With a Little Help from My Friends from the 60s. But like, yeah, it starts with just like, it has that, like, the style is so extensive. It's so detailed.
It has other references, like even in the poses in photo mode, there's a ton of references in there, and lots that are associated with Keanu. So I actually took a screenshot with him in photo mode where I'm telling him, no, you're breathtaking. And I took it at the exact moment that Keanu was like, kind of like that, like embarrassed. So it was a perfect screenshot. I'll share it at some point.
Sam and Tina, I was saying last week that what struck me about the opening hours is just how normal they seem to me for like an open world game. I wasn't really feel like I was seeing anything new. But then when you get deeper into it and you're like interacting with people that have like heavily modified their bodies, like it's one of the earlier missions where this like group of gangs.
Psychos.
Yeah.
Is that what they are? Where they've like gutted like the top of their head? Like, so it's not like their eyes are removed. It's just like
just got metal
everything
in the
from like from where their nose to like their forehead would be has just been gutted, and it's just like machinery in there. And you're like talking with this person. That was like the first time I was like, whoa, this is awesome.
They make you, they're so in your face about like doing drugs with them. And I'm like, no,
thank you.
I'm cool. Yeah.
Oh, I said yes. I thought they would kill me if I didn't.
What happened? You just said hi. No.
Yeah.
Does it just start swaying the screen like it does when it's like,
that's what happens when you take one sip of beer.
Yes, exactly. I was like, why is V's tolerance so low?
Because all that metal, all that chrome.
Okay, we can talk about Cyberpunk for the whole episode, but there are other games nominated for Game of the Year, like the previously mentioned Assassin's Creed Valhalla, a game that I was enjoying, but then started to get a little bit bored with and moved on to Cyberpunk. How about you guys?
I ramped up my enjoyance. I really want to go back. Like, I feel guilty for not playing that game right now, because I love castles and I love where I am right now, and just like going and exploring, and I have a really good weapon setup that I think I'm just going to keep for the rest of the game. So now I can just focus on stories and killing and stuff. It's really, really fun. Love that.
Yeah, same here. I've maneuvered my way around that game to where it feels like, you know, a second life kind of thing. And I feel guilty about not going back to it too. I'm definitely going to finish it. I'm pretty far along, pretty sure I'm right at the end. But yeah, Cyberpunk came and just kind of interrupted it. But, you know, we've got holiday break coming up. So both of those games will be done by 2021.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed my time with it. I think I talked about it on Scoop several weeks ago where like, I didn't make a deliberate decision. Like I'm done with this game. It's like the decision was just kind of made for me. It's like you have a menu of options to choose what to do every evening. And it's like Assassin's Creed was always like the fourth choice. I'm like, I don't want to play this more than I want to watch Mandalorian or play Astro or play, you know, play some of the other games. And now Cyberpunk has obviously taken it over. So not quite good enough to earn, you know, a spot at my table.
I will say I'm looking up because this is the only way I play games anymore ever since my career. So every time I play a video game, I also take notes. So I'm refreshing my memory and I'm pulling up my notes. And there's 3 points I'd like to bring up about Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Please.
1 point was written before we got to play Cyberpunk. And I wrote that it is very buggy, which is absolutely true. And I find it interesting that, you know, there isn't a lot of attention spent. I don't know what your guys' experience have been with it, but especially with like raids and stuff, like my crew is either like glued to me where I can't move beyond doors or I can't interact with objects. And I'm like, just get the hell away from me. And then, or they're like completely far off somewhere else, like, you know, running in circles around themselves. So it's frequently pretty broken. I've had to reload a couple times because I couldn't like swap a weapon for some reason. But once I reloaded, I was able to swap that weapon suddenly. So it's just, it's been interruptive, but fortunately the way that, you know, autosaves and my own saving habits works. It hadn't been too disruptive, but it certainly existed. I wrote down that I kept looking up options, dialogue options, in the hopes that my choice would mean anything down the line, and it never did. And I think that's just sort of the case for, like, that's the same in Cyberpunk too. Like, that's just the case for a lot of these games that are like, your choices matter. And it's like, your last three choices matter, but nothing beyond that actually did. And then the other thing was just sort of like a general thought of, in any game that has dialogue options, you have to think about the shorthand and how that shorthand translates to what you're actually going to say. And I wrote that nobody's talking about the fine art that is translating lines of dialogue into shorthand form, because I've gotten like wildly differing results from expectations and from other games. But in this case, it was really on par. Like I felt like I never felt surprised, whereas like in early Mass Effect games, I definitely felt like, whoa, that's not what I meant. That was said a lot more aggressively than I was expecting.
Yeah, I noticed that really a lot in Cyberpunk, where I have noticed like I don't know what the meaning of the shorthand is. It's rare. As you said, it's gotten so much better. But sometimes it'll be like, yeah, okay. Yeah. And like, if I texted that to somebody, it'd be dismissive, I think, you know? Yeah. But then like, I'll choose that to be dismissive and it'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry about this. I really understand. You're going to get through. That's like the sympathetic thing. That's only happened a couple of times, but I think it's funny.
That's a good idea. Tina, that's a good idea, taking notes while you play. I should do a better job of doing that. Do you just use your phone?
Yeah, I just use the notes app on my phone. It's the only way I would have remembered those 3 points about the game that I wanted to make. And sometimes I get like feature ideas and guide ideas and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, next nominee, Final Fantasy VII Remake. I think all of us enjoyed that game, but I think maybe everyone enjoyed it a little bit more than I did.
Oh.
Well, yeah, first of all, I don't like the whole way that the game was like framed and rolled out as just part one of whoever, who knows how many parts they're going to be and when we're going to get them.
Yeah. And it's literally not a Final Fantasy. It's just a starting fantasy.
Yeah.
I mean, without spoiling things, the best part about that game is that it's not a straight remake and sort of acknowledges and recognizes what comes before and makes really, really bold choices, storytelling choices that I think remakes part two and three, I'm so much more excited about them than I would have been. But that being said, you know, it's too padded to be a game of the year front runner for me.
Yeah.
Padded. Can you imagine really going back to that game right now? Can you imagine how bad we'd all be at the combat in that? Like, it was so specific. Yeah. All the equipping, like I would equip things before each battle to be like ready for it. Like that is no way.
Yeah, I think another big criticism that people have of that game that I honestly didn't feel when I was playing through it in Maybe it's only because this was my first experience with Final Fantasy VII since I hadn't played the original one. But yeah, people are like, "That's it's not a full game. There isn't a full story. Like, there's a this is part one, and so it doesn't feel like it's appropriate on that level of comparison to other Game of the Years."
Yeah. Here we are, what, 9 months after that game was released, and there's been no word on when the next part will be coming.
That's true.
It's going to be like 4 years, right?
Yeah. Anyway,
it's the open world part. Like, how crazy is that? Like, exactly, this game opens up into a giant overworld. There's how is that even possible?
And they got away with, you know, a linear RPG. Like, it's fine. Not every RPG needs to be open world full of choice. Sure. Like, it can be point A to point B, but like, when that's in a city, like, I don't know what they're going to do with the open world. Like, I'm worried that they're going to punt it and still just have it be, you're going to go from here to here to here to here.
Because that is how the game, like, technically plays out, right? Is that you start having those choices. But you definitely can't walk between these things. Like, there's an airship, and there's just, like, so much involved.
Yep.
Maybe they'll just do a dinky overworld overlay like they did in the original and just have, like, you can land at this city now. Like, I don't know. That would be fine.
The next nominee is my personal pick for Game of the Year, and I think maybe Tina's, and that would be Ghost of Tsushima.
Yes.
Wow, yes, both of you.
Ghost of Tsushima.
I mean, it's not really fair, you know, when it comes to me. I love open world games. I love Japan. I love samurai movies. Mm-hmm. All they had to do was not mess that stuff up.
Well, not messing the game up is hard this year, right? Oh, this
fair point. Yeah. The fewest bugs, probably, I think.
For sure.
I love that game. And I think, like, you know, there may be other stories or storylines that, like, maybe were stronger, or there may be, like, other elements of other games. But I think that the cohesiveness of the entirety of that game is what makes it my personal Game of the Year, because it had such a good flow. Like, some people complain about the last couple hours in the way that I would complain about The Last of Us is The Last of Us 2's last couple hours. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is still going? What is this, Return of the King? I didn't feel that, though, for Ghost of Tsushima. For Ghost of Tsushima, it just felt like everything naturally fell into itself. And I think there were some open world elements that I didn't participate in. Like, after a while, you get tired of the fox dens. Like, it's cute. I need to pet all of them. Like, you know, we can get away with the 3 second animation thing. But there were some others that, like, that I did still feel compelled to play through, as opposed to Cyberpunk, where I got bored of some of those, like, the smaller side quests and the gigs. For Ghost of Tsushima, the pacing of it felt so natural that I didn't feel like I had to interrupt my main quest line in order to get them done. Like, one of the most elegant game design compliments possible, in my opinion, is when you're looking at a map and there's, like, a main quest and there's just side quests around it and gigs, and they all feel like they communicate with one another, both in just the geography, the plain old geography of it, but then also the pacing of, like, giant main quest where it's a huge battle and you want to take your time on a smaller thing just to kind of, like, as a palate cleanser or whatever. And narratively, they're kind of tied together as well. So that's, to me, what felt like made Ghost of Tsushima a pretty amazing experience that I didn't want to put down.
It also oozed style like Cyberpunk. Like, it chose a style which was not just historical Japan. Like, it chose a really, like, painterly cool fantasy style. And then it added, like wind was really amazing in that. And it started using that in these really interesting ways. Like, wind and water and stuff like that is always fun games. And then they have you do is, like, sit down and write a haiku and just look how pretty this game is things. And they just, that's in engine. It's just like a static shot. And of course, photo mode is another, you know, really impressive aspect of this, but, like, just stopping that game and looking around, I would physically do that. I would just stop and be like, man, this is amazing. And I'm doing that in Cyberpunk also, but it's a little bit sadder because I'm looking at garbage and people with half metal heads. But great to see birds flying in that game, though.
Yeah.
The cues in nature is, like, a really, really clever masterstroke of just design, I think. And it's one of those things that, like, feels obvious and inevitable in hindsight, but, like, you know, someone had to come up with that and implement it. Like, that's, like, the best designed systems are the ones that, like, you know, feel inevitable once you've experienced them.
You move through the seasons geographically in that game, going south to north. Like, that's such a cool idea. That's such a Zelda thing that you would think of, you know, but it did it.
I have three notes that I can read.
Nice.
I haven't I haven't touched, well, I just edited it for bolding, but I don't know.
So here on out, we need to have the Dami Awards and then the Tina Notes.
The Tina Notes, at the end of every exactly.
Year.
One is like a late game thing, but I don't think it's really a spoiler because I don't even remember what it means, honestly, because I have the memory of a goldfish, and this is why I keep notes. But one of them was that I wrote that I love that the ghost abilities evolve with your acceptance of them in the narrative. So the gameplay and the narrative work together really well, that it really comes into its own as you get comfortable with that new style of combat and confrontation, because you're supposed to be conflicted. I'm a samurai. I'm not supposed to be stealthing around here and stabbing people in the back.
That was one thing I didn't like. The game is like constantly chastising you for playing stealthily.
Well, and only narratively, but gameplay-wise, it doesn't. Yeah.
Still, yeah.
But you're supposed to struggle with it. You're supposed, like, you know, as the character, you're supposed to be struggling with it.
And you can't resist it, right? Because, like, you can't make the choice not to use poison and then come out with a good ending. Like, that's not, not that type of game. Like, there's other games like that, but it doesn't present that option to you.
They open up a whole toy box of, like, look at all these really cool stealth skills and poison, then you use them, and it's like, you piece of shit.
You've brought shame to the family.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
But it's like the same thing of like, does every movie need to have a happy ending for it to be like an interesting, compelling movie, that kind of thing?
Of course not.
Groundbreaking, course. Damon. Okay. Second note, I wrote that I love the human aspect of this game the most, or I love the most human aspect of this game, that it's hard to convince some people to fight by your side, and everyone's got this like selfish point of view. So there's like, it's not just, you know, those TV shows where every side character is just like their existence, their purpose for existence is just to like progress the main character's storyline. It's, I felt the opposite in this kind of scenario. Same as Cyberpunk, actually. I felt like a lot of the side characters could have had their own worlds, their families, their own concerns outside of how it related to me, you know, the most important character of the game. Mm-hmm. And then my last one that I don't remember what it means, but you guys probably do. I wrote, and this is like a late game thing. So if you really, really care about spoilers, maybe skip ahead literally 2 seconds. But I wrote, what is this sacred tree? Am I supposed to feel feelings for this tree?
Is it where like the final...
It's on the island.
It's you return. You're supposed to like, oh, you don't return. Actually, I wrote that it would have been more impactful to have returned to a familiar area.
I think Mm-hmm. I think what happens is there's a flashback where you fight or learn from your uncle under that tree really early on, like in the first like hour of the game or something. And then they try to connect it after a 60 hour open world game.
That might have been what it was. Yeah. Because I remember there's a tree that, you and your uncle have scenes around. But it was also like
there's a lot of those
more
trees,
spoilers. Though. Yeah, exactly. I think this might have been a different sacred tree.
Okay. Yeah.
But the scene was meant to evoke feelings from you. And I think like you have to have established, and that's kind of the criticisms I have with The Last of Us, which we may or may not talk about in a minute.
Yeah, so we'll definitely get there. I just wanted to note that, we'll talk about that in a second. I wanted to point out a funny thing I noticed when I'm playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I'm performing a mental exercise where I just believe that it's not an Assassin's Creed game. It's just a Viking game. That's just like the mindset I get in, because it's just become, it's gotten way too far from what like Assassin's Creed is. It doesn't, I don't buy the fact that this Viking is a stealthy assassin, especially when the game is encouraging you to go on all these raids with all of your crew. It's just like too far away from Assassin's Creed. So I'm playing that believing just playing a Viking game. But Ghost of Tsushima could absolutely be an Assassin's Creed game. that makes so much more sense.
You could just, we'll just swap them. It's okay.
Just sprinkle a little animus stuff in there, and then
bam.
No, you don't even have to.
Then it really, literally is an Assassin's Creed game.
Well, there are hardcore Assassin's Creed fans that love that animus stuff.
Yes.
Okay, we are like running out of time. We're gonna have to speed through some of these other games. So we got to talk about Last of Us Part Two. Tina, do you want to start with your point?
I mean, the point that I was going to make was that they tried to have a couple scenes, the one that was related to Ghost, so they had to try to, they had a couple scenes where they tried to make you feel things about certain characters, but you'd seen them so many hours before where you had a different feeling about them, because you're like, I don't know this character, but I'm pretty sure this character's an enemy of mine. And then you flash back hours later, and you're meant to have this like different understanding of them. But I felt like I wasn't feeling the things that I was meant to, or that was the intended purpose of the scene. So just those like flashbacks are tricky to get right. Like flashbacks can be a really cool art tool. But if they're not done right, you know, it's It's potentially just like a distraction, like just additive scenes that don't really get the intended effect. So that was one of my criticisms. But yeah, then the game goes on too long. So that's
yeah. Yeah.
I like how I really starting as playing as Abby at first. And I was like, why am I switching characters right now? I'm really invested in this other storyline. Of course, that's the big trick with this game is that it gets you invested in Abby. And then after all that, though, what was probably not the intended effect, what I ended up being like, Ellie sucks. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with Ellie. She makes such bad decisions, and maybe that's their intention too, but it's not a good one, and it's not a good message. So at the end of the game, you have these two characters, you're just like, you can't make something where you can't relate or like any of the characters. In my opinion, like, that's not like a artsy, new, cutting edge thing to do. It's just not storytelling. It's just, and then they actually say in that game, like, I forget what the exact terminology is, but they're like, everybody's, you know, the sentiment is that everybody's awful. Like, frankly, that's just not a good plot of a video game for me, because it just justifies killing all these people in the video game and makes it very video gaming and not auteur-like at all for me. I'm just like, okay, if everybody's evil, then it's all equal, and that's why I can kill 300 people in the course of this game. I just think that's like so weak. I didn't think that was a coherent message.
That's a real problem I have with a lot of modern television, is that there's nobody to root for. Everyone's terrible. There's no one that's like a hero. I didn't really. I'm one of the only people. Me and Seth Macy are like the only two people that didn't love Last of Us 1. So I didn't play Last of Us 2. I give the game credit for. I watched a lot of videos and saw a lot of coverage of the game, and like the level of detail in the game world. Like Naughty Dog is on another level.
It's really cool.
There's no other game developer on the planet doing what they're doing. Like it's really really unprecedented. It's unbelievable that it's on a PS4. Like it feels impossible. And so, you know, like every technical achievement in the world, like they deserve credit for. From a narrative standpoint, you know, I spoiled myself on the game because I don't think I'm going to play it. And I'm not going to spoil Last of Us 2 here, but I think my opinion would probably line up with yours, Sam.
Yeah, there's so many things about that game that are really impressive on a technical level. Amazing acting, amazing writing, amazing, you know, world building. Even though the it's a dystopian world, it's still beautiful. There's an amazing museum sequence, but like the story in the first Last of Us, I think is amazing. And the story in part two doesn't go anywhere. Like, it's just like, I don't know. It does a disservice to the original game. This is light spoilers. Here's what happens in Last of Us part two. Ellie wants to kill Abby, but she can't find her, so she goes home. Then Abby goes to kill Ellie, but she changes her mind. Then Ellie goes to kill Abby again, but then she changes her mind. Yeah. That's it. That's the story. It's like, what?
It's supposed to be like these kids that grew up in this, you know, post-apocalyptic world have very different understandings of what family means, have very different understandings of what right and wrong means. So it's supposed to be the trajectory of them struggling with it. And then you, as the player, also struggling with it because you're seeing different sides of people's stories. So ultimately you're like, oh, okay, I'm understanding certain contexts about The Last of Us 1 and how that may have impacted how these characters feel in The Last of Us 2. But yeah, it felt like messy sequences to me where I wasn't set up in the same way that maybe you could have been. And I also felt like a couple elements were definitely, you know, mirroring things that were successful in The Last of Us 1. I wrote in my notes that I've pulled up here that there's a lot more of those giraffe moments. Those like, you know, really interesting, quiet moments that you're supposed to kind of reflect. But it didn't carry the same weight. And maybe it's to my fault, my own fault, for doing that constant comparison in my head to The Last of Us 1. But like even those dynamic dialogue moments that kind of carry you through parts of The Last of Us 1, where you're supposed to just be traversing the world, getting from one blowout fight to the next stealthy fight to whatever. Those were supposed to carry you through them, like while you find the ladder and you put it up, and like that was the meant to sort of like,
right? That was a big part of
it. Just so for me, they didn't feel as well timed as The Last of Us 1, so I was just constantly making those comparisons in the back of my head.
I mean, games are participatory, you know, it's like the player is playing it. They're not just passively watching it. And so to be forced to play as a character making decisions you hate is interesting, but
yes,
like,
exactly. It's an interesting exercise, but
yeah,
we've done it. We don't need to do it again.
Really what I want to do in a video game.
Yeah.
Seattle is so cool in that game. The river through the center of Seattle. And like, that's the, you know, that's where the giraffe moments really take off. And there's a few like tiny little open world segments there, which they really only did like, I think twice in the game, but where you get to run around, you're like, this makes me want a feudal Japan set game from Naughty Dog, maybe with a little bit of animus in it.
More Japan in 2021 game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. A game that really surprised everyone this year is Hades. And I for one, am super happy to see a roguelike game get so much love this year. Although I really like Hades a lot, super gaming game. But I actually like the moments in between runs more than the runs.
Oh, yeah. I played it for 3 hours last night, so I can talk about this
for
the first time.
Nice. Well, hit us with your thoughts.
Oh, no, I can wait for you guys. I just wanted to remark that I can participate, and I'm happy about that.
I think I like the same thing about Hades that I like about Cyberpunk, where like there is such impressive flexibility in viable builds. You know, and it's a roguelike, so you don't know, you're sort of cobbling it together as you go, and it has that best feeling that, like, you know, the card games Damon and I like so much, like Slay the Spire, where like you get one card in Slay the Spire and you're like, okay, man, I guess, you know, it's a new strategy. Like Hades feels that way with its perks and weapons, and like it's so impressive that like you are viable from beginning to end in all these different flexible ways. Like, what an achievement.
Yeah.
I feel like I got my ass kicked when I used the bow and arrow, but other than that, I agree.
The bow and arrow.
I love the bow and arrow. Yeah. That's the way I can survive. Yeah. I'm like, I've always been in an RPG where you would play like, you know, the tanked style character versus like the range style character. Always the range style character. It's like, don't get close to me. I will get way too nervous. I need to kill you from a distance so I feel secure about that. And the bow and arrow, once you start stacking all of those abilities on top of them, yeah, they become glorious.
I figure that might be the case because the levels have parts where you can kind of run to a corner and just like take care of stuff. And there's an occasional level where I get like a layout where I get like just hammered though. But Damon, you had already talked about this, and I've heard other people talk about this. Like, it's so funny going to your little home setup and talking to everybody, and then more things open up and you can, you know, give presents and visit. And it's just so funny. Like, I love that part of it.
It's so cool the way that they planned ahead to like dole out little bits of information and little bits of the story in between your runs when, you know, they have no idea how many runs it's going to take any player to finish the game, right? Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
I'm not great at the game, but I still feel like it strikes the perfect balance between like giving you permanent upgrades and rewards and sort of like ensures that, like, you know, even if you're a poor player, like you're still going to be able to inch your way through it and get through it eventually. Like it just feels perfect in that way.
Yeah, the fact that like death is such a natural progression as part of the game, like any challenges that you do confront never feel frustrating simply because you accept that death is part of it. So whereas like other incredibly difficult games, like I'd throw the controller to the side and like load up Cyberpunk instead or Assassin's Creed Valhalla. In this case, it's just like, oh, everybody dies, you know, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And you get bonuses for dying. And then like, I mean, it's a perfect roguelike that way. And what you said about the story really reminded me of Rogue Legacy, where it's like, hey, like you have to die in Rogue Legacy. That's the point. Your ancestor carries on from there. Like, I really like it when they tie the repeated death loop of these games into that. It's very funny.
I like how horny the game is and how sexy it is, and like, but not in like an overt way. It's just sort of, it's there underneath the surface all the time. In a way that, like, you know, the fandom has really picked up on, and that's like Supergiant in their art design and their voice acting and their storytelling is, you know, they're able to thread that needle in a way that I think a lesser developer would fall down a little bit.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, and then there's a game that, man, I wish I'd have played, and that would be Half-Life Alyx. Just by all accounts, anyone who has played that game is amazed by it, but it's sort of locked behind this VR platform that so many people, you know, don't own, right?
True. I plan to play it before the end of the year, though. I have my Oculus all set up, or coming and going to set that up and do it.
Yeah.
So I'll report back in January.
2021. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Early 2021.
And that's because of how irresistible, like, seriously, our staff is so pro Half-Life Alyx. Like, people just talked about it constantly. And there's really cool stuff. My favorite thing that I heard was when this tip went around our staff, where you could You can only carry a couple grenades, but because the game has like the full physics engine in it, you could pick up a basket and then put extra grenades in a basket and carry them through your levels and then use them like grenades. And it was like a cheat that like totally worked in the game because the game had been set up to be that basically open worldy in physics.
Yeah.
Sandboxy. Yeah.
I'm really, really excited to play it. I'm excited to see Valve back. That's a little bit mean, but just like, you know, Dota and Counter-Strike are not my thing, you know? And so, you know, narrative Valve back and single player storytelling back and using Half-Life as a vehicle for pushing new ideas and new game design, which that franchise has always been about, that is awesome.
What should have been our thing, Justin, was Artifact.
Yeah, Artifact was bad.
Yeah. Miles Morales. Spider-Man Miles Morales on PS5.
Yeah, I really liked it more than I expected to. I expected it to be just sort of easy breezy, superficial, like Spider-Man 1.5, and it punches above that. And I really love it. And I think, well, I don't remember how I voted on Game of the Year now, but that may have been my second choice behind Animal Crossing. It was way up there.
I liked it for performance, and I think Miles is such a well-performed character. It's just great, just a troubled kid and making tough decisions. And I just love that about Spider-Man in general. And I think his Spider-Man is just so much more interesting than the previous PlayStation Spider-Man. It's great.
Interesting. And the final nomination, would be a game I'm not sure any of us have played, but our own Seth Macy reviewed and is a huge champion of, and that would be Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Yeah, I mean, from everything I see about that game, I love that they used these, you know, basically satellite composites to make an amazing version of Earth to explore very slowly or to speed across. I think that's so cool.
Yeah. Because that game is using, you know, satellite data and software to render, you know, the entire planet, that game is only going to get better with time as they figure out better and better rendering techniques. And so that's really exciting to me. We're like, they've laid a foundation that, like, it's already an incredible experience. Like, what's it going to be like in another 5 years? I think it's really something special.
Like Animal Crossing, one thing we couldn't do this year was be with other people. In this game, you can't fly or travel. Like, so that filled that void for people. And I saw a lot of people being thankful for that. My favorite part of travel is not being on the plane, though, I'll tell you that much. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really appeal to me. But it is funny to think how much they nerded out over airports, which are also like the least appealing places humans really inhabit, I think, in my opinion. But
an underrated thing about Flight Simulator is that there is an endless level of toggle between arcade flying and like realistic flying and every single step along the way. So it's like, if you want to pick up an Xbox controller and just drive your plane around, you can. Or like at the extreme most simi level, you have to go through the entire pre-flight checklist to like have a plane take off. It's like 87 steps of like flipping individual switches and like checking things. Seth says it's impossible if you're not like a real pilot. And like, you know, but then everyone decides like where on that scale are they for themselves? Like, okay, I want to skip the pre-flight checklist stuff, but I want it to be, you know, still a fairly realistic sim experience.
The less I know about how planes are operated, the better, in my opinion.
I've always
been super freaky there to me.
Criticize them.
Yeah. Tina, what you should do is you should load up Flight Simulator, get a flight going, get up in the air, turn on autopilot, and then lean back and pick up play your Switch Crossing. And play Animal Crossing.
Yeah, true. That's how I would be a pilot, that's for sure.
get your cat to bring you peanuts.
We've eaten up almost all of our time talking about Game of the Year awards, but of course it's a really big topic. Tina, our winners are going to be announced on Monday. That's right?
Yep, that's the plan.
Cool. Please be excited for that. Perfect Dark, should we hold this for the next episode?
I think we got to hold it.
Okay, we're going to hold it. So we're going to jump into...
Oh my God!
Video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Mark. Mark says, thanks so much. Oh, he also, he says, thanks so much for another year of Scoop. Through what's been a rough year for all of us, the only video game podcast has stayed awesome and the laughs haven't stopped.
That's what I hear.
Do we have that shirt yet or what, Justin?
We do not have that shirt yet. We have a new, we hired someone for the store, so maybe we can finally get some of that stuff going that I was having to do myself. Is it Mark? This is important. Is it Mark with a K or C?
It's with a K.
Okay, good.
We got this.
Okay, let the questioning begin.
Could this have been a Game of the Year contender in the year in which it was released?
No.
It's a throwaway cutesy question. Oh, so it's a bad game. Not even a question. Well,
oh, hold on. You said in the year that it was released.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Could it have been?
Yeah. Well, effectively, was it a good enough game that people would have debated whether or not it was the best of the year?
Okay, there's some reality where this game, well, I don't know.
Well, you can just think of it in your...
So it's
in
a middling game.
The Damon translation is, was this received well?
Yeah,
Yes, the game was received well, yes.
But I do like the detail that he was confused about the Game of the Year.
Yeah, thing. I know,
that
really
means
helpful.
It wasn't like an amazing game. It was like...
There's some reality.
Yeah.
There's some reality in which Mass Effect 2 didn't come out that same year.
That would have...
But this sounds like it also could be pre-Game of the Year consideration stuff, because I actually read a Video Game History Foundation article about when people started picking games. Yeah. And it was
that's like, what I was just going to say. It's like, it makes me think that this is a 90s game. Like, the Game of the Year is a modern-ish construct for our industry. Is this a 90s game?
Yes.
Cool. Good work, everybody.
That was useful.
That was really good. Two questions and we have the decade. Yeah, that's really good. Did this come out on cartridge?
Yes.
Did this come out on an SNES cartridge?
No.
Mm-hmm. Is this game tied to a license?
No. That's five.
Does this game have contemporary sequels?
No.
Did this game come out on a Sega Genesis cartridge?
Yes.
Yeah.
Genesis, but not Super Nintendo. Not a Sonic game.
Probably means it was an exclusive.
Is this on Genesis collections these days?
Yes.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
So renowned enough.
But not licensed, so it's not like the Disney Connect collection.
It's going to be like Bejeweled or Beyond Oasis or one of the B games.
B games?
I'm just making that up after I said those two.
Is it a Capcom game?
No.
Okay.
Is it published by Sega?
Yes, and that's 10.
Okay. Is this a puzzle game?
No.
So it's not Mean Bean Machine or not Bejeweled. I said Bejeweled. What
columns.
Did I mean?
Columns.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I was picking up what you were putting down.
Mm-hmm.
Sega game, but not Sonic because it doesn't get contemporary sequels. I don't know. Golden Axe,
not Streets of Rage. Yeah, it could be one of the Golden Axes.
Was this game originally? Well, yeah. Was this game also known for being in the arcades?
No.
Cool. Is this a action RPG?
No.
Oh, so it's not it could be Phantasy Star because that's just a straight up RPG.
But that had a sequel this year.
Phantasy Star? Phantasy Star Online? I don't know. That's a different thing.
Okay. We can ask if it's an RPG.
Well, I don't. I'm trying to think.
Is this a platformer?
No.
Oh, no. We were doing so good.
So we got sports game, racing, RPG. Like, what? I guess it's an RPG. Sega, does Sega only have Phantasy Stars?
As an RPG? I mean, no, they had Shining Force.
Oh, yeah, Shining Force. That's a good example. And then there's also real-time Strat stuff, but I don't think a lot of those are published by Sega.
Not a platformer.
Do you play as a human?
No. That's 15.
It's Altered.
Oh, no.
It's an arcade game.
Yeah, it's an arcade game. Mm. Also, you're a human that's altered, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, technically, you're an altered beast. I think what you are is a beast that turns into a
It's not altered human.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
The backstory is that it's stupid.
I love it.
What the heck is this?
I mean, it could be one of the Phantasy Stars or Shining Forces.
You could be a robot.
You could be a robot, but like it's not Vector Man because that's a platformer.
Is it? It is.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You're shooting things, but yeah. No.
This is weird.
This is weird. I was a Genesis kid growing up, but we've eliminated a lot of the obvious suspects.
Have we mentioned this game yet?
You've not mentioned. No, you haven't.
Okay. Is it an RPG?
No.
This is so silly.
Yeah, it is really silly.
Could this be a Sonic game? Because it's a Sonic game and there isn't a Sonic game this generation or something?
No, you asked. I don't remember exactly what you asked, but it was something like, is it still getting sequels today? Like,
yeah.
Like Spinball, and then that doesn't have a sequel, so he would count that.
Damon wouldn't do that to us.
I think he would. Do you play a Sonic the Hedgehog? Or is Sonic the Hedgehog in this game?
Yes.
Wait a second. Sonic Spinball is not a good game. That wouldn't have been a Game of the Year contender.
It's hard to tell. Let's see if this is a pinball-based game.
Okay.
Show me pinball-based game.
Yes.
Is this Sonic Spinball?
Yes, it is. So 20 plus. Wow. Okay. I like that game. I like that game. That's probably the best Sonic game.
I owned it, so I was really disappointed. That was good. Damon.
That's my line, Damon.
I say about the Kirby miniature golf game all the time.
The best Sonic game is Sonic Spinball. When things were dying down, Damon, now you just kicked them all back off again.
It doesn't die down. It doesn't
you
just die
gotta,
down.
You got to thumb them in the eye once a year or so.
It's the holidays. Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
That's your Dammy Award. Yeah. You monsters.
Sonic Spinball. I thought that game was well received, and I actually kind of like that game. But what? Nicely job. You got there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay.
I took some psychology from the very first question onwards.
Yeah.
As per usual.
Yeah. That is going to be all the scoops we have for you this week. We'll be back next week with the Dammy Awards and Perfect Dark and a bunch of other fun little surprises. So thank you to Justin. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Sam. Thank you to Borba working behind the scenes. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Yeah, you don't gotta tell me.
Soup all over yourself.
All that soup.
If you can find me a man that knows how to eat soup without it getting all over their shirt,
he thought of a straw.
Look, we give up bibs too early, is my opinion.
Mm. Yeah.
We should do like IGN themed bibs next time.
Yeah, or like the big oversized napkin that you can just tuck into your shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be a part of our store.
Bibs. We should get bibs out of the store.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Bibs for babies and adults.
Mm-hmm. Actually, onesies would be very cute.
Yeah. Podcast Bib Yond.
Oh my God.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.